Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, you can get completely free and private access to the tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. You can download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can go to the App Store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will download an app that's completely free and private and gives you access to the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those on a repeated basis, they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefits from these tools in record time. We hope people do all of that soon and often because it tends to lead to improved quality of life for people. It also tends to promote comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please do so. Give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. If you do that, it'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a discussion. If you'd rather do this through email because you don't want to talk about your issue live or put it out there, and or you're listening through the archives, you can send us a question, a comment, an answer, or a testimonial through an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get those comments or questions, answers, or testimonials, we will address them on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a note that lets you know what day and time this was addressed, and you can go back in the archives, which is another powerful free tool that's available, and listen for whatever the comments were in response to your query. The archives are available for almost every show that's happened in the past 11, almost 12 years now. It'll be 12 years in January. And there might be a few shows where the technology had a glitch, and so it didn't get recorded, or if it did get recorded, it got damaged. But for the most part, pretty much every show that's been done for the past, the original was 8 years, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and then for the last three-plus years, it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, and those are available in the archives for you to access. So we encourage people to do that, and let us know how we can help you, how can we be of service to you. That's the intention with this work, is to be of service. And if you'd be so kind as to let us know, we would appreciate it. Makes it far easier for us to live into that intention when we know we get feedback from people. Is this useful? We got some feedback from a caller yesterday that even though it seems difficult at times or upsetting at times, he's finding great benefit in the reading that we're doing of the Way of Mastery, going slowly and some would say painfully slowly, some would say meticulously, some would say at just the right pace. But yesterday we finished reading through Lesson 26 in the Way of Mastery, and I'm approaching the Way of Mastery as though it is offering us a set of tools, and the tools can help us live a life that's fuller, that's deeper, richer than what we might be able to accomplish if we just relied specifically and solely on our conscious logical mind or our intellect. Intellect, as this work calls it. And the point of this work is that the intellect was only ever intended to be a very simple tool, a servant to a higher level of experience, integration, loving, respecting, having gratitude for the gift of life, participating in the flow of life, finding a way to become more and more of an open conduit for the creative, loving energy. Being able to be in the flow. Asking to be shown, asking to be taught by life. And this book says over and over and over again, what you experience in life is something you create. And you create it by how you choose to interpret and respond to the life events and the flow of life in, through, as, and around you. Lesson 27 in this work is titled, The Purpose of Your Life is to Love. We're using Dr. Michael Rice's regulatory speech. We would amend that, and we would say the purpose of your life is to extend love, is to be love, to be aware with your conscious awareness of your true nature as love, as the extension of the loving energy, the creative energy into form. So rather than reviewing Lesson 26 right now, I'm called to move forward into Lesson 27. And the title of it is, The Purpose of Your Life is to Love. The purpose of your life is to extend love in every interaction. And the text reads, Beloved and holy friends, again, you're called to remember that you are viewed as an equal by the consciousness, by the entity, by the wisdom that channels this work. Beloved and holy friends, we come to abide with you in order to instruct you yet again in the way of knowing. Remember always that knowledge is perfectly certain. Knowledge is that which is unchanging, unchangeable and unchanged forever. Knowledge is reality, and reality is love. Knowledge is the essence of your being, the essence of your soul. So here they're redefining the word knowledge for us. They're saying, put aside everything you've got in your dictionaries about knowledge. And when we use the word knowledge here, we're talking about the truth of the experience of life. We're talking about the capital T truth of what actually is. It is unchanging, unchangeable, and unchanged forever. It is reality, and reality is love. And here in this work, we'd use a capital R, reality. In Dr. Michael Rice's work, he would use the word actuality. Beloved and holy friends, we come to abide with you in order to instruct you yet again in the way of knowing. Remember always that knowledge is perfectly certain because it's just what is. It's just what happens. Knowledge is that which is unchanging, unchangeable, and unchanged forever. It's the flow of life. Knowledge is reality, and reality is love. Knowledge is the essence of your being, the essence of your soul. The text goes on and says, if anyone says unto you, quote, I do not know, close quotes, they are a liar and a hypocrite. Though I would not suggest that you use those terms in your communication with them, but rather, whether in your own life or in relationship with a friend, whenever doubt seems to arise in the mind, remember only this. The mind that has doubt in it is a mind that is not currently choosing capital R reality. It must therefore be choosing something else. The something else is that experience world of the ego. For we use the term ego to differentiate the state of awareness that is characterized by confusion, which is wearing the mask of certainty. When anyone says unto you, quote, I don't know, close quotes, or whenever the thought arises in your own mind, quote, I don't know, close quotes, rest assured that in that moment, that mind, your mind, is choosing to be other than what it is. It's choosing to create an experience that is other than the truth of what it is. What is it then that you know? Quote, I and my Creator are one. I am intimately connected with that very source from which all things have sprung forth. Close quotes. Because this is the truth, because it is the capital T truth of your being, this means that for any situation that requires a decision, you have within yourself access to perfect knowledge. And perfect knowledge seeks to extend itself. Extension requires the realm of manifestation, the realm of form, the realm of individuation. Therefore, you, as a body mind, abiding in space and time on a tiny planet, you are reality's decision to manifest itself in form for no other reason than to extend its own nature. The happiness of the soul depends on its decision to extend only that which is loving. Because you are the manifestation of capital R, reality itself, of capital K, knowledge itself, of capital L, love itself. And because you are that, it must mean that in any given moment, there is within you a part of the mind that yet remains free from the ego's authority. that part of the mind in which there already abides perfect peace, that part of the mind in which there already abides perfect certainty, that part of the mind in which there already abides the willingness to extend, capital L, love without attachment. There is already within you that part of the mind that can deliver up to you the answer for each decision, the answer that helps to extend love first into your own beingness and then through it. For you can only give what you first receive, and in your giving, your receiving is completed. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, if you would look to see the purpose of your life, it is quite simple. Being only love, you can have no other purpose than to extend the treasure of your very self. Christ is God's only creation. Christ is that medium through which the unfathomable, mysterious, beyond comprehension source that I have called Abba, and it goes by many names, that source extends itself into the creation of temporary forms to reflect throughout the universe. It reflects that which the universe itself is made of, where it comes from, what it is enveloped within, and that into which it eternally returns. Because you, like a wave unto the ocean, have been birthed from that reality, emerging from that reality, you are one with it. Therefore, you are Christ eternal, and that is unchanging and unchangeable forever. Within you then, even in this very moment, there abides a part of the mind that already knows the truth that sets all things free. That part of the mind can be accessed at any time by anyone under any conditions. It does not require years of cultivation. Although in the field of time, it can appear that you are getting better and better at it, simply because you are enjoying it more and more and giving value to the fear-based egoic ways of arriving at its decisions less and less. That part of the mind is like an empty and open channel. Nothing can obscure its purity. Nothing. Nothing you have ever done. Nothing you've ever thought, nothing you've ever miscreated obscures the perfect silence, the utter purity of your connection with the source of your being. For love is always connected to itself. What does this mean? First, anyone who truly enjoins the way of knowing must make a decision to accept the atonement for him or herself. This is an example of accepting the atonement. Quote, I am one with my Creator now. I choose to fulfill my purpose by extending only the reflection of myself, and I am but love. Close quotes. Second, anyone who would enjoin the way of knowing must also look and embrace the very fact that their attention is involved in the world of space and time, the world of the body itself. But in the way of knowing, the world of space and time is seen differently. The world is seen as something that exists external to the mind itself, not as something which has a power over the mind, not as something to be feared, not something that one must be conformed to. Rather, the things of time and space are seen and embraced as that which is given of the Creator to the offspring in order to be utilized as devices for assisting Christ to extend love. It does not matter whether it is a pencil or a computer or a trip to your grocery store or a party in which you invite your friends to come and play. All things finally come to be seen as having only one purpose, the extension of love. Putting your purpose into practice, the next section is titled, Putting Your Purpose into Practice. Imagine a business person sitting down to negotiate the closing of a deal, who goes to that part of the mind that is sane and says, quote, what price should I place upon this land that I am about to sell to this other corporation, close quotes. While her accountants and realtors have been telling him that the property is worth $1 million, she goes within herself, and the answer comes back as, quote, ask only $250,000 and ask that another $300,000 be donated to such and such a charity, close quotes. In your world, which is the world of insanity, the businesswoman would say, quote, oh, no, I can't do that. I can't listen to that voice, close quotes. But in the way of knowing, in the way of enlightenment, the businesswoman smiles and says exactly what has been received. And when the shock on the other person's face settles down, they will be quite happy to know that they've saved a lot of money, for in their world, they think that the only way to have is to possess. But in the way of knowing, and in the way of reality, the only way to have is to give. Now, you are like that businesswoman. You abide in the world in which the business of your reality is to extend only love. Be you therefore not afraid of the world, for when seen through the eyes of the enlightened soul that accepts its oneness with its Creator, the world of space and time is perfectly benign and has no purpose whatsoever except to serve Christ in the extension of love. That is why anyone who comes to answer only the voice for love miraculously finds that the universe comes to support that one in ways that the egoic mind can never understand. Miracles do occur as creation flows from a mind unencumbered with the pressures of trying to make life go the way the ego thinks it should go. And here we begin to touch upon the essence of my teaching. Quote, I need do nothing, close quotes. This is not a passive state of just accepting the fact that, quote, I need to do nothing, so I'll just show up and follow my impulses and not think too deeply or wonder what I'm doing. I really don't need to do anything since none of it matters, close quotes. That is not it at all. It means quite actively to learn and master the art of, quote, you need to do nothing, close quotes, to find that spaciousness within you in which you are willing to allow that voice within you that is eternally connected to your source, you allow that voice to be the vehicle through which you receive your guidance. Pure recognition that you have no purpose except for the extension of love. It is not your purpose to survive as a body-mind. It is not your purpose to keep the same house that you've had for the last 20 years. It is not your purpose to be in relationship with this person or that person for the entirety of the life of the body-mind. It is not your purpose to accomplish great things. It is not your purpose to be wealthy. It is not your purpose to do anything except to be that conduit through which love extends itself. As you come truly to allow love to be your greatest beloved, as you set aside all other idols, the need to hold on to the house, the need to have certain dollars in the bank, the need to have certain people in your life, as you come to see all of that as part of the world of illusion, as you come to love love, or you might say it's come to honor love above all things, you will have come to honor yourself, to love yourself. For you are love and only this. As you come to love love as your beloved more and more, you will discover that you are guided on a path of miracles in which more power seems to be getting extended through you. You will begin to witness that the universe seems to support you more and more in ways that you could have never imagined. Out of that, you might indeed see the life of the body-mind changing. The car you drive, the home you live in, the quality of the beings that come into your life. Yet, you will be unattached to these things, for you will not see them as ends in themselves. But you will see them merely as the proof that the great wisdom of love that underlies all things is connecting you to new forms and new contexts because it knows that now it can flow through you more powerfully, more certainly, more maturely, and more wisely. Therefore, seek not to improve your life by adding even one cubit unto your stature, but rather seek to improve your life by realizing your nature as love. How do you do that? You do that by recognizing that in each moment, you are in the right place at the right time. This is the moment in which love can be remembered, can be restored, can be extended. This is the moment in which you can decide to listen only to the voice within you that knows how to extend love. Beloved friends, in the way of knowing, the illusion that there is something to seek vanishes. The mind is liberated from the misperception that there is something wrong going on in the world. The mind is so liberated that it knows, as long as it chooses love, as long as it follows the mysterious, quiet voice within its own heart, that the choices it makes, the decisions it embraces, the actions it takes, and the thoughts that it thinks cannot help but serve in the further awakening of everyone and everything. So perfect is the love that embraces the whole creation, the whole of creation itself. You've heard me say to you many times that wherever you know a fearful thought, it can only mean that you are not thinking rightly. That is, you are not thinking with the mind of the Creator, for the Creator is but love. If $1 million were to come to you as Christ, you would say, "This must be the perfect experience for me now. How can I extend love in this moment?" And if in the next day your wallet is perfectly empty, the enlightened mind of Christ says, "This must be the perfect event for me to be experiencing now. How can I extend love in this moment?" The changing can never be the source of peace. the world of form, whether dollars in a bank, houses, cars, people, friends, lovers, pets, plants, and all the rest, can never be the source of perfect freedom. These things arise and pass away and are like ephemeral shadows, wisps of foam dancing in an ocean. When the mind becomes identified with the form, that mind suffers. When the mind is liberated from attachment to form, it is free. For it is identified only with content, or simply the reality of love. In any given moment, you have the power within you to experience the reality of love, unobstructed, unmediated, now, without need of magical means, without need for the universe to arrange itself in any certain way whatsoever. In any condition, you have within yourself the power to decide to literally feel and experience love. Love, or the experience of it, is a decision. It is not something earned, and it is not something created. It is that which is eternally present now as the very identity of your being, the very life and existence of your being. Now, I don't know. It's entirely possible that the book Messages of Life from Death Row has been influenced by The Way of Mastery. It's a book written by Pierre Pratervand based on his letters back and forth with a death row inmate. And the copyright is 2009. So, you know, this was The Way of Mastery was channeled from 1994 to 1997. So it's possible that Pierre Pratervand had access to this. But as Roger McGowan had access to this work. But in the intro to the book Messages of Life from Death Row, this is about a death row inmate who was sentenced to death row for something he didn't do, spent 26 years there in Texas, one of the most abusive places on our continent, to spend time. And rather than choosing anger and bitterness and hurt and resentment, Roger McGowan has chosen to become a spiritual teacher. And there are five things, right, in the foreword to this book that Pierre wants you to know. This is what you're going to hear from Roger McGowan. This guy is in a 6-foot by 6-foot by 10-foot cell where they're actively abusing him. And he says, love is the fundamental law of the universe. It is the reply to every situation. It is our reason for existing. It's the essence of what we are. Love is easy. Hate is the difficult role to play. Point number two, everything that happens in life is an opportunity to learn. Life is a school of higher learning. Point number three, we can refuse to be victims, and we can take total responsibility for our lives. Even happiness is a choice to be made, whatever the circumstances of one's existence. Point number four, God, infinite love, provides a field of infinite possibilities so each of us can create a life that is perfect for us. Point number five, everyone creates their own reality, essentially through their way of looking at, interpreting events, people, and situations. Now, as I said, I have no idea if Roger McGowan and or Pierre Pratervand had access to The Way of Mastery, but The Way of Mastery says, right here in Lesson 27, in any given moment, you have the power within you to experience the reality of love. Unobstructed, unmediated, now. Without the need of magical means, without the need of the universe to arrange itself in any certain way whatsoever. In any condition, you have within yourself the power to decide to literally feel and experience love. Love, or the experience of it, is a decision. It is not something earned. It is not something created. It is that which is eternally present now as the very identity of your being, the very life and existence of your being. Area code 828, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is Magda.
Hello, Magda.
Hi. Okay, so as you're reading all these beautiful passages about love being a decision and we can experience it any time that we want, I want some help from you. A few days ago, I was waiting for my car to be serviced. I was in the waiting room, and I was on one side of the waiting room, and there were five people on the other side, about 20 feet away, and they were chatting among themselves, and I decided, well, while I wait, I'm going to take a little snooze, close my eyes, and kind of drifted off, and I heard them talking in the background, and I had no idea what they were talking about, and it wasn't loud enough to be an interference. So then my little reminder on my phone told me that it was time to call my brother, because he and I have an arrangement to meditate together on the phone every day that we can. And so I called him, and we chatted a little, and then started our 20 minutes of meditation. And Dr. Tim, this is, I think this is true, who knows? It seemed that as soon as I began my meditation, the volume of those five people went up, and their topic of conversation became very, very clear, and it was all political. And it was all of a political nature that is opposite of what I believe in. And I was keenly aware very, very quickly that I was having a difficult time sticking with my focus on being love, being peace, being quiet, and radiating love out to everyone. I was asking Ruka Jakuta, please help me stay in love, please help me get into being aware of the love that we are, and it just wasn't working at all. I wanted to listen to what they were saying. I did not have the impulse to talk with them about it or argue or anything of that nature, but I really wanted to hear it, even though it's all of the things that I expected they probably would be saying based upon their political bent. And sure enough, one after another, all of the stories came out one by one. And so I know that I have some work to do here, and I'm just wondering if you can give me some direction about what would be the best to start with.
Okay, well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that you use a phrase like that what they're talking about is the opposite of what I believe in. Right? So you use the phrase about believing in something. So this is about the core of this work is to identify those beliefs and get rid of them. Remove your attachment to them, whatever they are. I don't know how much you've been following along as we've been reading the last few lessons, but it even talked about going into your house and looking around, and if there's anything in your house you see that when you see it, you have a thought, oh, God, I couldn't live without that, or, oh, I'd be crushed if that were gone. The book says, give it away. And I talked yesterday about how you don't have to give it away, but you can start doing worksheets on it and journaling and EFT tapping and goal canceling around this so that you remove your attachment to it. So that if you come home one day and the house is burned down or a burglar has broken in and stolen this thing, you do not put yourself through torture and hell on earth because of your attachment to this physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a part of this work, right? This whole thing is, in order for a mind to awaken into the way of knowing, we have to identify the fears we have. If we have an attachment to anything, there's a fear associated with losing it. So that's why it says you must look into your mind and identify all these fears. And that's why at the end of yesterday's show I was talking about using the reality management worksheet and the mind shifter and all these other tools that Michael and Jeannie make available to specifically make progress in a very direct, practical way on what the way of mastery and the way of knowing is asking us to do. Identify our fears and release them. Dismantle them, cancel them, shebag them. Attachments to a car or a person in a relationship or a stereo or a certain amount of money in the bank is exactly the same as an attachment to a belief.
So
I would encourage you to understand that you are turning yourself inside out, upside down, over a broken toothpick or a $5,000 stereo or a $40,000 car. And all of these things are going to be gone in 100 years anyway.
Right.
All of these things will probably be gone in 5 years. The same thing is happening when you turn yourself inside out, upside down, because you've got a belief. Somebody says, you know, Christ was not God and Jesus was not real and Jesus never existed and your religion is stupid. And then you want to go fight that person. I mean, this is what literal wars have been fought on this planet over such statements and beliefs.
Right.
So I know that my political candidate is better and my policy, my political party's policies are better for this. And I know this and I believe this to be the truth. When I pour my belief energy into that, as soon as that's threatened, whether real or imagined, I'm going to generate all kinds of pain and fear and consternation within me. And over and over and over again, this book, this set of teachings has been trying to get us to understand, in truth, I don't know what anything is or is for. I, in truth, the more I can rest into the divine ignorance that comes from the direct observation, I don't know much of anything, that my senses are only picking up 1% or less than 1% of what energies are in the world around me, and my mind, human brain, is only able to track less than 1% of that 1%, then I instantly step into the observation that it is the highest silliness for me to say, I know what's right and what's wrong, and I'm going to get angry about this and happy about that. It's just plain silliness.
Got it. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I've done the exercise with stuff, you know, physical things, and have not really thought about my belief at all to be part of this process. So that takes me to an entirely different level. Wow. Okay. Okay. Rattled off. Go ahead.
Well, if you're like most people, when you come to realize that your thoughts and your beliefs are no more permanent and valid than the cattail, you know, fluff that's blown around because the cattail has matured and now it's, or the dandelion floaters, you know, that your thoughts and beliefs are no more permanent than the fog that dissipates when the morning sun comes up. And they have no more value anywhere in the world than what you give them in your own mind. And they don't have the value that you give them in your mind. They don't have that value anywhere else in the world. And when you begin to realize that, and you begin to understand the core of these teachings, which is that I'm the one that creates any tension or fear or any negative emotion that I experience, and then I wake up and realize, oh, I think I'm generating this experience because somebody dared challenge my beliefs or my thoughts, then you have a good laugh.
Yes.
Then you breathe a sigh of relief and you move on at liberty to enjoy the gift of life in that next moment and to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful in your next interaction with whoever, including yourself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. Right. Going back to the actual situation, it was quite an eye-opener for me. Like, okay, I'm being given this wonderful talent, which I'm not meeting. And so I knew that there was a big lesson here. Beyond that, is there a... Can you envision a scenario in which if I were in a different place, if I had in fact already examined the political beliefs that I hold that are different from those people and come to the conclusion that it's all temporary anyway, so it doesn't matter, how... I'm asking for a prescription, aren't I? How would I have managed or experienced that differently? I want
well,
something
first thing,
to look
the first, forward to. The first thing to do, and this is first, middle, and last always, is to come back to the core of these teachings and understand that what you're, the pictures that your brain is showing you are not the truth of life. Especially when any of those pictures are colored by judgment, labeling, skin color, religion, politics, right, wrong, good, bad, up, down.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not seeing the shimmering radiance of the creative energy of the one mind expressing before you. You're seeing these pictures that you have attached meaning to, such as disgust, and threat and fear. So that's the first thing, is to wake up and say, oh, I'm not seeing anything clearly because I'm in a negative emotional state. Let me breathe and soften and cancel any goal and ask to be shown this shimmering radiance. Look at, you're sitting in a room with the miracles of life expressing around you as human beings, life, form, creative energy expressing in form. Every one of those people is exactly like you. It's another they are sparks of the one divine mind, period. At this point in time, they're talking about Democrat versus Republican and this and that and MAGA and whatever. But 1,000 years ago, those same sparks of divine mind would be on the planet talking about, you know, gold doubloons and pirates and ships and, you know, they're not yet at the top of the food chain. So we got to, you know, fight for our lives and protect our babies, and we're living in teepees. And it, but it's all the same stuff. It's consciousness. And whenever you cannot see the beauty of life expressing in form, your lights are out. Stop the car.
Yep.
When you focus on what someone says and your focus on them saying certain words sets up in you a frequency of pain or fear or contraction, Mm-hmm. No, in that moment, you are completely out of touch with the flow of life. And you are reacting to old patterns in your mind. And you're creating images in your mind that have nothing mm-hmm. to do with the actuality of life. That's the first, middle, and last step to take here. What you create as an experience of interaction after you've had that shift in perception, I have no idea what it would be and how limitless, right? What just flashed in my mind is the idea that, you know, there've been a lot of hatred and racism and prejudice and people getting bullied and, you know, hate acts in public transport. And so there was this one set of people that were saying, listen, here's how to train yourself to help, to intervene in a situation like that. So there's somebody on a bus or a train, and there's an individual person, and there's maybe, you know, dozens of other people, but there's this one person who's getting attacked verbally and emotionally by other people there, right? Maybe mm-hmm. they're teenagers, maybe they're gang members, maybe they're just from a different political party or whatever, and they're throwing insults at this person. And you walk in at your bus stop, and you walk in, and you see this thing unfolding. The way to intervene is not to stand up to the bullies and say, stop what you're doing, and that's wrong, and you're, because now you're in judgment, and you're labeling them. The way to intervene is to talk to the person as a person, the one who's getting ridiculed, and say, mm-hmm. oh, what a lovely hat. Can I sit next to you? Sounds like a, you know, you're having a difficult day. Tell me about, you know, your family. And you engage the person at a level of wow. seeing their true nature, not engaging the garbage, the fantasy of difference, and the fear, and then therefore the anger and hatred that gets generated around that. That's just what came to mind. This was a public service announcement that was trying to, you know, encourage people, rather than get into a fist fight or a knife fight with the bullies.
Right.
Talk directly to the person who's being treated as though they're less than human. Talk to them as an equal. Engage them directly. The bullies will have a difficult time. If they're really practiced at bullying, they'll know how to extend their bullying to you too, but you then will be two for love, for connection, for respect, and radiating that energy in that situation, and it's amplified exponentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's great. Okay. This has been tremendous help. Thank you. I have a lot to process here and let go of. Yeah.
Well, I encourage you to keep us posted as you try doing that. This is something that it only comes up after a while when people have actually made enough progress at detaching their identification with enough physical things that they actually move into the realm where they can start detaching their identification from their beliefs and thoughts. But that's what's being called for as we move through the way of mastery into the way of knowing.
Yes. Okay. I was going to jump up to the next level, but then my mind said, no, I think you're going to crawl up.
I'm just going to do the next piece of work.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So let's see, in terms of the work, then, what's coming to mind is possibly doing a worksheet on on those people, those five people, and my reaction and what I thought. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't be doing any worksheets on those five people, right? I would be doing worksheets based on the conversation we had on my attachment to my beliefs.
Okay.
I would be doing a mind shifter that says, it's safe and healing for me, and I love it to be surrounded by people who believe the opposite of what I believe.
Good place to start.
I welcome the ability to question my beliefs.
Oh, that one feels terrible.
Yeah, because I understand that they're false. They're a stale old set of thoughts from the past, and I want to use them to live my life and move into the future. It's silliness. You know, last night we were in the support group and we were listening to the Michael Singer lectures. He has a series of lectures he did about his book, The Untethered Soul. And he's talking about how, you know, the more we stay in our comfort zone, the more we limit ourselves and stay stuck. And that any true enlightened person welcomes the turmoil of being challenged, of being pushed out of their comfort zone, of being stretched, and because they realize that's the only place they can grow. And that's the edge of their comfort or the edge of their fear is where they grow and they release their attachment more and more. So that's, you know, the first thing is to say, what was I generating upset about? And my mind is telling me I'm generating upset about these people and what they're saying. But the, you know, one calming breath and one stepping back, and I instantly realize, oh no, I'm feeling that my values, my beliefs are being threatened. Oh, I must be really attached to my beliefs.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really of the world in that moment. I'm getting all kinds of charged up. These people aren't throwing knives at your head. Right?
Well, not at this moment.
And yet the physiological response, oh yeah, but they might. So listen, I tell you what, there's a sale on AR-15s going right now, and you can get good ammunition, and the right you get, cause, and you want to take those people out now, because someday they might throw a knife at your head. Please see the silliness in this, right? When you want to say, well, they aren't right now. Yeah, that's just silliness. Now I'm really of the world. You know this phrase, we learn to be in the world but not of the world. What does that mean? It means to be attached to, identified with, and feeling threatened by thoughts, words, actions. Remember, the higher level in this book, at the Way of Knowing, we understand we need do nothing, including survive physically.
Well, yeah, there's a good one.
I don't need to protect myself, especially from somebody else's thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Even though those thoughts may lead to what so many people are talking about, civil war.
Do you have any idea how many years people have been talking about civil war?
No.
Okay, have a plan for what you're going to do when civil war breaks out?
No.
And just breathe and soften into this. So watch what you're doing with your thoughts to create hell on earth in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then take a breath and realize you're still breathing. Your heart is still beating. Your food is digesting. This vehicle, this temporary communication device that you call the body-mind unit is still functioning. And in this moment, there's an opportunity for you to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
For you to experience it inside yourself and then share and therefore teach only the loving thoughts that come through that body-mind unit. Sure, there will be these other negative thoughts. That's not in doubt. It has told us that several times through this teaching. The difference is we don't have to value it. We don't have to identify with the negative thoughts. We don't have to share them. We can choose to share only the loving thoughts. So
okay.
I realize we're at the end of our time, and I should wrap this up so that we can start, because it's a communication part two, and it needs all of our next hour to finish. So thank you for the call. Please feel free to keep us posted on your progress.
Thank you. Thank you. I shall. Right.
Bless
you. Mm-hmm.
I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of love. We are love and everything else is false. Here is your second hour.
Do you know, when I saw you come in the room and do that, I thought that you were angry. Now, somebody who's defensive might jump in and say, well, I wasn't angry. You know I'm never angry. Anybody ever known somebody that plays that game? It's like, no, wait. I'm not saying that you were angry. I'm just saying that I have an issue and I felt like you were angry. That's something about me. That's not about you. And then you want to identify the issue that you have in terms that makes you responsible for it. And so oftentimes people's communication will end with, and you were angry, as though that's the problem. And the truth is, if that were an accurate scenario that you were involved in, and you were in upset, the problem is not the fact that, let's say I was angry. That's not the problem. The problem is that my anger triggered fear in you. So when you're doing the subjective observation, you're using language that reflects that this is about a reality in your mind. I'm not saying you were angry. I'm saying I felt like you were angry. And that's not the issue. What I'm realizing is that I was afraid. Now you're starting to describe your issue. And when in communication there is a conflict, there's an interesting thing that happens. We usually have two people involved in a conflict. And what happens is person one in the conflict has an issue and a problem reality. And all of their words try to convince person two that it's their fault. Person two at the same time has a problem reality, and all of their words try to convince the other person that it's their fault. So person one stands insisting that person two should fix what's going on in their mind. Person two stands insisting that person one should clean up their act so that person two won't have an upset in their minds. But remember when you looked at the two-door igloo up there? The two-door igloo came from the content of the mind looking at the situation. And when I recognize that I have a painful reality in me, if I'm going to blame everybody else for it, probably most people are going to go in the other direction. Because most people, when they were little people, tried to fix other people's realities and figured out you can't do it. And all you can do is lose. In fact, most people, when they were this high, made up realities. When they tried to fix it for somebody else, it's hopeless, it's helpless, and it's all my fault. And the minute you start telling somebody else that they're responsible for what's in your mind and that you're supposed to fix it, that usually triggers in most people, hopeless, helpless, it's my fault, and they want to leave. But your communication is about wanting to keep somebody there with you. Your communication is about creating an interaction where each person can place the reality in their mind intact into the other person's mind. You do that by using words that describe the content of your mind as though you know it's the content of your mind rather than something that's all their fault. So we're turning around the communication of the world. Because when you recognize that your mind is an evidential device and you use projection communication, you made me mad, here's what happens. You hide the part of your mind with which you create your anger, and you use that part of your mind and you put it into your brain's image of everybody else. And so now all of a sudden everybody else is responsible for your anger. Guess what you just did? You made it impossible for you to ever heal your anger. As long as you hold your mind in that posture and you use projection language, you made me angry, you're saying, mind, build me a reality about them that shows me that I have nothing to do with my anger, that it's all their fault. Now, the person who knows that they're responsible for their own upset, their own anger, their own sadness, their own fear, is going to use responsibility communication. And responsibility communication is going to look more like, you know, when such and such happened last night, that brought a lot of anger up in me. And I really want to be responsible for and heal my anger. Would you support me in that? Now, just check out how that feels. Let's imagine that any one of you watching this video right now or here in our audience, we're in a one-on-one situation. And in one case, I communicate with projection communication. You know, what you did last night was really nasty and things better change around here because you really peeved me. How does that feel to everybody? Does that warm the cockles of your heart and make you want to be right here with me and support me in my process? Not highly likely. But let's change that to some responsibility communication. You know, last night when thus and so happened, anger came up in me. And what I know is I really want to be responsible for and heal my anger. Would you support me in that? How much easier is it going to be to stay in relationship in that situation than the one where somebody's wagging their finger in your face telling you it's all your fault? It makes the difference of aliveness in relationship and death of relationship. Now, if you think about the family home that you came from, the school system that you came up in, the entertainment world that you see, the educational world that you were in, how often in any of those worlds, when you saw two people in communication with each other over an upset, did one of them turn to the other and say, you know, when you did thus and so last night, I had a lot of anger come up in me, and I'd really like to be responsible for and heal my anger. Would you support me? How many saw that as the way behavior was modeled in your world? It's virtually unheard of in our culture because our whole culture is about projection language. The whole language base of our culture is, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid, it's all your fault. And so, of course, everybody's going around holding that it's everybody else's fault because they just told their minds to show them that it's everybody else's fault. Now, I have a question for you. If you lived in that world, if it's everybody else's fault, how is it possible that they could be the one with the problem when you're the one with the pain? Something about that doesn't make sense. When you're in pain because there's an energy happening in you that doesn't belong in you. When you're in pain, it doesn't mean that somebody else did something wrong. Now, they may have. But them doing something wrong is not the cause of your pain. The cause of your pain is the fact that there is an energy in you that doesn't belong in you, and you'll keep that energy hidden from yourself as long as you use projection communication. And in fact, when you hold something painful in you that you don't want to deal with, that you don't want to look at, here's what happens. I had the privilege about 20 years ago of getting to do some work with a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. Marcel had instrumentation in the laboratory with which to take the picture of the high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Literally, if you hold something painful in you that you don't want to deal with and that you keep doing projection communication about, every time you communicate about it, that energy in you is intensified. Marcel Vogel would be able to take a picture of that intensified energy. And that intensified energy sets up a wave that literally resonates or draws somebody to you to play that out with you. And so by using projection communication, you guarantee that more and more and more people are going to come and do whatever it is that you don't want to have done with you. In fact, if there's only one person on the planet who's capable of playing that dynamic out with you, you're going to set up a resonance that will draw them to you. If that one person is in China today, they don't know what it is, what the energy is that inclined them to get on an airplane and go to New York and arrive there the same day you happen to be going to New York. They don't know what the energy was that inclined them to walk down the incorrect hallway and meet you at the corner and do whatever the behavior was. But they're going to show up in your world because you need them in your world.
Well, wait a minute. I've already got this pain in here. Why do I need somebody to inflict pain on me? You're crazy, Michael.
No. As long as you've got pain in you, you need somebody who will show you your pain so that you can change your mind about it, so that you can bring it forward to love and transform it. You need those people who can show you those parts of you. And life guarantees to provide you that, because the purpose of life, once you put something into your structure that doesn't belong there, is to kick you right square in the limitation, to show you exactly what you're holding on. And when you hang on to that, when you hang out with that continuously, you're always drawing somebody in to play it out with you. So if I come in looking angry and you go into terror when I throw the eraser, your issue is not my anger, and that's where most people want to stop. Your issue is your terror. Most people don't ever go that far in their own minds as to identifying their issue. They stop short with, well, the problem is what they did out there. No, 100% of the time, if there's pain in you, the problem is what you're feeling in here. And it's not until you communicate accurately that your mind can show you that. And once you communicate accurately and your mind can show you that, then and only then can you correct that part of your mind. And so the subjective observation identifies your thoughts and feelings, again, in terms that makes you responsible for it. And if you, the idea of this step is to reflect and own your reality, not to prove that your reality is true about them. And you want to get that reality that you hold. And what's the reality in that situation that we're describing? Well, gee, you know, the truth is I realize I've got some terror. I'd rather sit here and talk about your anger and how you threw that eraser. But the truth is, what I really need to communicate about, what I really need to get intact into your mind is that when I perceive somebody as angry, I have terror. Terror in your tissue structure, if you don't ever deal with it, will kill you. Terror is an energy that doesn't belong in human tissue. The thoughts of terror create the chemistry that destroys the cell. When you communicate accurately, you can recapture that chemistry, that energy of that thought, and bring it forward to what was called the altar. The ancient teachings, the conscious mind was called the altar, A-L-T-E-R. That's where you can alter or change an unconscious dynamic. So as long as you keep your terror hidden, then it's eating away wherever it's stored. The idea of responsibility communication is, if I have terror in me, I want to know it. I want to access it. I want to bring it up out of my cellular structure. And I want to be done with it. There's a really powerful beatitude that goes into that. It's interesting, and again, you know, talking about translations earlier. In the Beatitudes, we're told that each of the Beatitudes starts out with a statement that says, blessed are they. Blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. This has got to be a really important idea, because this is Yeshua's first public teaching, and he uses that term repeatedly. The word, interestingly enough, in Aramaic is the word tuvehun. There is no justification for translating that word as blessed are they. None whatsoever. What it means in Aramaic is this. a latent or an unconscious neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being, becomes your conscious possession, you who, and then what follows, each time the word blessed are they in the Greek translations is repeated, that's what it says, and then what follows is a set of instructions for how to get that neural structure activated that the Creator put in you to start with. And the beatitude that traditionally is translated as, blessed are they mourning their wrongs, for they will be comforted. In Aramaic, here's what it translates. A latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. You who love truth, you who look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society, for you will be cured of mental stress. That's what he said 2,000 years ago. He was teaching you how to heal your diseases. He was teaching you how to access the mind energy that created destructive chemistry that would destroy you. And that if you love truth enough, and you're willing to look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society, what you would do, you would be able to recapture that destructive chemistry that is in the cell, bring it back to mental awareness, and transform it. This is another piece that Paul had where he said, be transformed by the renewal of your mind. The steps were about reaccessing hidden parts of ourselves and cleaning them up so we could heal. And projection communication guarantees your inability to heal. Responsibility communication shows you the parts of you that are in need of healing. The parts of you that you need to recapture. And by taking responsibility, and a lot of people interpret responsibility as, well, are you saying I'm to blame for this? This is all my fault? Notice there's nothing in the word responsibility about fault or blame. Responsibility is simply a tool for accessing a hidden part of your mind. And when you can access those hidden parts of your mind, then you can clean them up again. This set of tools, responsibility communication, we've done 3 steps out of 7, shows the beginning point of how to access hidden parts of your mind. How to get to the point where you love truth so much that you are willing to sacrifice your story about being an innocent victim and how it's all everybody else's fault. Again, the average person who has terror about what they perceive to be someone else's anger never looks at, acknowledges, or communicates about their terror and therefore never gets to clean it up. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive has nothing whatsoever to do with letting other people off the hook because you have something painful happening inside of you. And the whole communication system of our culture is used to keep things hidden from ourselves. And what we hide from ourselves is what creates our diseases. So by loving truth enough and communicating responsibly, and owning our own issues in a situation, we give our minds permission to take things that perhaps have been hidden from us for generations. Bring them back to awareness. Some of those things we made up when we were 2 and 3 and 4 and didn't have a clue as to what was going on. Some of those things came to us genetically. It's time for us to become aware of those things again. This set of tools allows that. Let's take a short intermission. So we've looked at the first 3 steps of responsibility communication, and then the 4th step, you get to say what you want. Number 4, what I want. And at this stage, what most people do, their natural form of communication is, of course, there's an upset, so there's some form of hostility or fear. So all they want to do is solve the problem. And the problem is, you came home angry. If you just never come home angry again, everything would be fine. So they think what they want is to solve the problem. What we're going to suggest to you at this stage is that problem solving is the last thing you want to do. Because you draw to you the experiences you have, because you need those experiences, and when those experiences bring pain to you, you need to be about healing your pain. You don't need to be about changing their behavior so that you never get to deal with your pain. We do a workshop called, well, actually it'll be the workshop we're doing this evening, right after this, on codependence. And what we'll see is that when one lives out of that codependent state, in that codependent state, they're limited in their behaviors. And one of the behaviors, one of the things they think will solve all their problems is if they could just control everybody in the world. And people who live out of that state of what we call non-being would simply control everybody so that nobody would approach and show them the part of themselves that they need to be responsible for and heal. And so by controlling the world, they would assure their own death, because the energy they need to heal is their physiological disease. What we're suggesting you want to do is, in coming from being, you want to own and be responsible for and find the parts of you need to heal, and with your communication enlist support for healing those parts of yourself. And so step four is a request that always relates to receiving support and healing the issue you described in number three. So what I want is, and it relates to having support for healing. And it's healing the issue identified. And you want to make sure you keep on track that you're about healing the issue you identified in number three. It's not about changing them. It's not about manipulating them. It's not about getting them to never come home angry again. It's about how do you gather support for finding the part of you that attracts that behavior repeatedly. If you utilize this as a tool to solve your problems, to get others to change, it will backfire on you. If it's used to manipulate others, it will backfire. The more specific you are in identifying your painful reality in this situation, the more powerful this will be in your healing process. And if you don't get the support you want. You know, at this stage, when you own it, you say, gee, I had pain. This brought pain up for me. You know, there are going to be some people will say, all right, good. I'm delighted. That's exactly what I wanted for you. Well, that might be the place to start looking at, what's the part of me that attracts people who don't support me? Why do I feel like I need to be in a space of no support? And it might be a place to turn to one of the other tools. You might pick up the reality management sheet. You might pick up the commitment from the Healing Through Relationships workshop. And so this isn't the only tool that we're offering. There's a whole range of tools. And, of course, this would tend to be a tool you would use more often in situations where you've got some cooperation, where you can elicit some support for healing. And so if you don't gather support, then you start looking at, what's the part of me that I need to heal that feels like I don't deserve support because I'm obviously not creating support in my world? And so it becomes a big clue. Now, the next step in the process of healing can be an extremely difficult step, because what you have to do is you have to actually listen to the person you're talking to as though they were intelligent. And they might have some answers for you. Now, your mind believes that they're the problem. because you're able to hide the part of you that's in need of healing. When you bring two people together that are in conflict, you've got two people who have painful realities that they need to be responsible for and heal. When they set up responsibility communication, they'll stop playing the game of, I think you should change my mind, and this person says, and I think you should change my mind, and so neither mind ever gets changed. Into a cooperative effort for where each takes responsibility, and person one says, you know, I realize I have a painful reality, and I really want to be about healing that. Would you support me? And person two says, and you know what? I have a painful reality too, and I'd really like to gather some support for healing that. Let's join in support of doing that, rather than each one standing insisting that the other one's got to fix our mind. So you actually treat this person as though they've got some intelligence, and the person who can resonate the problem that you have is very likely the person who carries the energy of the solution if you can set up an actual healing situation. So you start number five out with, do you have any ideas? And the reason you do that is because if you're in pain, and a lot of people say, well, you know, I know what my problem is. If you knew what your problem was, your problem would be solved. The minute that you have a problem and you're in some kind of turmoil or pain, and you hold that you already know what your problem is, you're lying to yourself. You don't know what your problem is, or you would have already taken care of it. Your non-being mind, this mind of hostility and fear, says, I know what the problem is, and that's its total projection. And so this set of tools is about bringing responsibility back and finding those parts of me that I've been hiding from myself. It's about moving out of blockage of truth into love of truth. And so you ask this question with an open mind, not a mind that thinks it already knows the answer. And if they don't give you the answer you want, you get upset with them. So in number five, it's, do you have any ideas? Now, in the situation we talked about with the eraser and all, let's say that my response to you is, as you ask if I have any ideas, is, well, you know, let's sit down and do a worksheet. We'll take the reality management worksheet from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, that forgiveness process, and we'll do that process. And so we do the worksheet, and all of a sudden, boom, there you are. You discover that, gee, when I was a kid, you know, Dad was an alcoholic. I was the smallest one in the family. And half the time when Dad was drunk, he was a happy drunk and he had gifts for us all. And the other half of the time he was an angry drunk and he beat up on us. And all the big kids in the family pushed me out when he came to the door so that they could figure out which mood he was in and whether they needed to scatter or be first in line to get the gifts he had. So that's a major issue that someone would hold in their physiology, because at least half the time they went out, they got beat up. So that might be the discovery in the worksheet process for this person. And then, having discovered that, it might be time to add another solution into the healing process, or another step into it. So in number six, I might feel, as I get in touch with that trauma and the, you know, the actual body trauma of that memory, I might decide that, gee, you know what I really need to do is do some still point breathing. Would you breathe me? So there's a place for you, once you've listened to their solution and participated, there's a place for you to offer, I think, what would help is, and you might ask for support in doing a breath session. And so you've moved through a lot of issues in doing this responsibility communication. And doing one worksheet and one breath session might not be an end of having been pushed out 100 times in front of somebody who was angry and beat up on you. So then in step seven, the final step in the process of responsibility communication is there might be need for problem solving. You know, gee, I realize that I have this issue of terror when somebody comes in. You know, I was reading that book and you came in and, gee, I didn't realize that you were trying out for a play and you had to come in looking angry and didn't even realize I was in the room. I just thought you were terrorizing me. And so how about now that we've discovered I have this issue and it might be one of my 77 times 70 worksheet issues, this isn't going to all disappear in one session. How about we problem solve here? And problem solving might look like, you know, if you have one of those bad days at the office and you're angry, you know that I'm sensitive to somebody coming home like that and surprising me. How about if you just pick up the phone before you come and say, hey, you know, I've had one of those bad days, and be aware of it and don't pay any attention to what I say or do. So now we've solved the problem and we've done the healing work that's necessary. And the way that that was done was through responsibility communication. Once somebody can, without blame, put the reality that's between their ears into the mind of another person, understanding unfolds. When you couch the reality between your ears in words that make somebody else to blame, it tends to cut communication. When you can utilize responsibility communication, it gets a whole lot easier for someone to hear you. I have another letter I'd like to share with you from a young man this time who did this workshop and took these tools to address a long-standing issue that he had had with his father around alcohol. This young man, and again, I've got his permission to share this, this young man had been an alcoholic and gone through AA and several treatment programs and finally came across this work and really started to work with this work. In fact, he's taught this work. And this is a letter that he wrote his dad about responsibility communication and opening some new levels of communication with his father. And it's in response to an email that his father sent him about his sister. So he writes back to him, "Hi, Dad. Thank you for opening the door for conversation. I would like to talk with you to clear ever more space for our relationship. My commitment is to always be responsible for my own limited views on reality and refrain from projecting my feelings onto you or anyone else. So to first answer the question, was I ticked off at you? The answer is that no, I was not. Honest, I was very conscious of what was going on for me, and it wasn't that. What was going on? Well, as you know, I do a lot of spiritual work every day, meditation, prayer, worksheets, etc. The goal of that work is simple. I hold it to be true that we are all love, and that love is our essential nature, our essence. And all we need do is forgive all thoughts or energies that are less than love, and we will come into full expression as the incredible people that we are. Sometimes, often, this process is not Dr. Feelgood. It requires real courage to consistently be responsible for how I feel and how I see the world, others, and myself. As you know, it takes courage to take responsibility for, and then he's got in brackets, so I can heal with God's help, feelings that are painful and may have been suppressed for decades. So yesterday, perhaps because I've been doing a lot of processing lately, some of my old painful realities kind of came up in my face. I admire your perceptiveness from yesterday because you picked up that a lot of my hostility was up, and I would like to ask for your support to share it and heal it. I think the trigger for me yesterday was the glass of red wine next to you on the deck. I saw it and reacted like Pavlov's dog. In spite of myself, I was filled with this hostility from the past. I share this with you now for two reasons. One is to process my feelings, to be responsible and let go, so that whatever you do or say in the future, I will be able to hold a space of love inside myself. When we're together physically, or even just in my thoughts. This is not about manipulating you or getting you to change your behavior. It's about continuing to create an honest relationship with you, especially where honesty has not existed before. The second reason is because I owe you the truth. As part of your support team, I owe it to you to speak about things that I see as potential blind spots or trouble spots. I have been bothered recently by the thought that Robin, in a significant way, Robin is his sister, has been a more faithful daughter to you than I have been a son. She spoke her honest thoughts to you, specifically about drinking, regardless of what feelings or reaction it might trigger. Her intentions may or may not have been loving ones, but my intentions are supportive and loving for both of us. Dad, for years, my brother and I have treasured the opportunity to go to you with our life's challenges. I will continue to love and to turn to you. We have also known that we had to do it during the day, preferably a work day, because you're just not the same person at night or on Sunday afternoon. This is because of alcohol. There is a shift in you after you've had two or three drinks. Not every time, maybe, but certainly sometimes. There is often a strongly sarcastic energy, sometimes only toward the TV, that comes out that is not present in you when you're sober. Why did this glass of wine bring up so much hostility in me yesterday? I can only guess that it has to do with suppression over many years. I have come to recognize this as a family motto. It's been passed from generation to generation. I noticed it on the phone when I was offering Mom support in her effort to stop drinking. She admitted that she felt angry at the fact that I even brought it up. Imagine that. After all I've been through with detox and AA and all, I've been humbled completely in this area. It's still not permitted in our family culture for me to offer support to Mom in her effort to drop alcohol. That happened 2 days ago, and it brought some tender feelings up for me. I see it in comments from my grandmother regarding a book about the Irish and Southie. She told our cousin, that never happened. Nobody ever did that. That book was a Pulitzer Prize-winning autobiography of a child's memories. Of course it happened. This is how our brains work, though. If something is painful, we think we can make it go away by condemning even the thought of it. Can you imagine saying to Nanny when you were a child, Mom, I'd like to have a serious talk with you about the way you talk to Dad. It really brings pain up for me when you say harsh things to him. I don't think you ever had a safe relationship with either of your parents to do what we now have the opportunity to do. I honor you and Mom for creating a family structure that is so loving that I am now sending you this note. You and Mom have done incredible work for our whole family line. Also know that our relationship and our family is more important than any issue. I am in it forever, and as a friend once said to me, in it to win it. We can win as a family by always growing in love. In too many families, these things get taken to the grave, literally. I can remember being a child and even mentioning a word about Mom drinking and being harshly treated for bringing up that subject. It was taboo and not my place as a child to talk about it. I learned that it wasn't safe to discuss. When I got older, I learned that I could express ideas that seemed unsafe by using sarcasm. Now I know the devastating effects on my own body of using sarcasm. The word actually comes from a term that means to tear flesh. It is as destructive to the body as smoking is, I suspect. So I don't do it anymore, and when I'm conscious of my behavior, I change it. You only need to listen to Uncle Bob on any given holiday to notice how sarcasm is a means of expressing hostility that we have each been raised to suppress. So that's all part of what was going on for me yesterday. I would like to talk about it with you in a positive space. I also, in a general way, will commit to getting out of your face. I've noticed, and I didn't like it, my own behavior at the beach house telling you you have to change if you want to be healthy at 77. That was a stupid approach to you and not who I want to be. I promise to work toward always giving you the space to do and be what you choose, as I now have the space to do and be what I choose. I guess this is all about letting go of resentment that I created in myself because I felt I couldn't be honest with you in a safe way. If it's not appropriate for me to be around you in a certain state, I'll make sure that I make the choice for myself and find something else to do. I imagine that this statement may bring up some tender feelings for you. If so, notice that I'm always there to support you. I'm always committed to being your son to the best of my ability. So if you're feeling something like, son, I know drinking is not the healthiest choice for me. I have thought about stopping, but I think my life works fine with it and I enjoy it. Then I can support your right to choose and I begin to truly mind my own business. Knowing that you know where I stand and being free from pretending, it's not a factor in my life or our relationship because it's been a huge factor. I'm 33 now. I'm responsible for me. You are responsible for you. In that context, I'm ready to start again and support you in any way I can. With love. How many of us have ever had a challenge with a family member that included issues at that depth? Maybe not that particular issue, but issues at that depth. And the minute we opened the door to communication, the communication was about blame and what they had done and how they destroyed. Do you see the shift that takes place when this young man has the courage to take responsibility? And as you think about the stages and the steps in that letter, how huge the issues are that he's just finally faced at the age of 33 and worked through right there in two pieces of paper. Issues that, as he says, oftentimes go to the grave with us. Communication is such an important key in our relationships that without it, relationships wither and die. Projection communication causes the death of relationship. Responsibility communication not only brings relationship back to life, but it opens the internal dynamics of the person who's doing the responsibility communication so that the hidden parts of their minds can be seen. And when those hidden parts can be seen, they can be changed. We can move out of the world, I'm right, you're wrong, it's settled, why argue? And as we do that, we can undo a lifetime of issues that have come from a multitude of generations. Because on an energetic level, we inherit the ways of dealing with things that our parents had and their parents and their parents. And we tend to pass those on to our children. When you recognize that the mind is an evidential device and you start to speak responsibly through it, you give it permission to see evidence totally differently. How many young men have raged at their fathers for their alcohol use and shattered their family systems? That letter that I wrote earlier, how many people in business situations, when they were unjustly accused, which that young woman obviously was unjustly accused, how many people just destroy what potentially holds great gifts for them? And as she was able to utilize responsibility communication, she opened some doors in business situations that otherwise she could have just slammed shut and been angry about for the rest of her life. Held resentment about. And resentment, I would offer, you know, there's a lot of conversation in the culture these days about flesh-eating bacteria. Guess what's going to create an environment on a cellular level for that kind of an organism to thrive? That's exactly the thing that's going to create the ideal environment. You know, there's that old saying, if you feed them, they will come. When you put an energy into tissue, we talked about Bruce Lipton, cell biologist, you think a thought, produces a neuropeptide, the neuropeptide becomes the chemistry. If you put destructive chemistry into a cell, that cell starts to deteriorate, and that cell becomes food for the bacteria that go along with deterioration. When you can recapture through responsibility communication, that which, when we look at the tiny, you know, an energetic wave, they talk about the quantum waves. A quantum wave, when collapsed into a cell that is of a destructive nature, looks like a thing we call a chemical. But when we can communicate, what we'll find is, when we take that out of suppression in the cell, we stop the deterioration of the cell, we access and bring it from its collapsed so-called chemical condition back to the wave, and the wave can then be removed from the structure. In the ancient Aramaic language, removing from your structure those waves that never belonged in a human structure becomes key. And the forgiveness process. If you haven't done the workshop, Why Is This Happening to Me Again?, I suggest that you get some materials on that workshop. You can go to our website, download and read the book for free. Get the instructions on the forgiveness process. It shows how to take all of those waves that we've collapsed into our chemistry that supports, because there's degeneration happening and there's certain organisms that feed on degeneration, that supports us being able to access those parts of ourselves and bring those parts forward for healing. When you unload what does not belong in the cell will naturally go back and rebuild itself. Because, you know, if you look back, you know, people will say, well, this person has a diseased heart or lung or liver or what have you. If you go back to the single cell at conception, there was no heart, no lung, no liver. What was there was an energetic pattern and an intelligence that built out of that energetic pattern a heart, a lung, or a liver. If someone puts into that heart or lung or liver an energy that doesn't belong there, then a degenerative process starts to take place, which we call disease. And all that's happening in that degenerative process is the power that continuously rebuilds each organ. You know, if you look at soft tissues, depending whose numbers you take, somewhere between 60 and 120 days, every cell of every organ in your body, the soft tissue in body, is totally regenerated. It's totally rebuilt. Now, it is either rebuilt according to the original perfect set of instructions, or if you've overlaid hostilities and fears upon it, those instruction sets are deteriorated and the resulting organs are deteriorated. When we can go back and recapture those energies with forgiveness and with responsibility communication, we literally remove those instruction sets that cause the deterioration, and the next generation of cells come out healthier. Now, most people think that that process has to do with time, because usually they watch it happening over a period of time. Well, you know, 10 years ago, this guy had a healthy liver, and here he is now, and it's degenerating. It must be because there was 10 years in between. Well, it's interesting. In the Chinese language, the word for liver is the same word as the word anger. And if someone is continuously loading their liver up with anger, then their livers will start to degenerate over time. But time has got nothing to do with it. It's got to do with the qualities of energies that go in and interfere with the instruction sets for rebuilding. Responsibility communication allows you to recapture those instruction sets. And if they're no longer appropriate, if they come from hostility or fear and do not support your being, then by recapturing them, you get to forgive. You get to remove what never belonged in your structure in the first place. And that's the whole goal of this work, is to take us to the point where we can do that. Now, if you're going to take this set of tools, or as you take this set of tools, one of the things that tends to happen is people take real life situations where they have real life emotions, and the first time out of the chute, they take this and they go, now I'm going to do responsibility communication with you. Guess how long that's going to last if you've got 20, 30, 40, 50 years of projection communication? It's going to last until the first emotion comes up, and you're going to be right back to the old pattern. So there's a rule that goes along with using these communication tools, responsibility communication, and I call it the rule of the three Ps. Practice, practice, practice. You want to go to work with these tools, and you want to use them in a way that you're not confronting real-time emotional issues for you. So you want to pick out some silly situation. And using that silly situation, take the responsibility communication sheet. By the way, if you're watching this on video and you don't have a copy of the instruction set, you can go to our website, www.whyagain.com, whyagain.com, and download the worksheet. You just click on the right-hand side. There's a button that says worksheets, and you'll see that in that spot. But you take the worksheet, and you follow the steps step by step and pick some ridiculous situation. You know, go to a nursery rhyme book and open it up. The cow jumped over the moon and the dish ran away with the spoon. Well, I have an issue. You know, I'd like to get this issue cleaned up, and I ask for your support in working through it. Objective observation. The cow jumped over the moon. Subjective. Now, I'm really upset because I was told that cows couldn't fly. And so I realize that I've got some upset that I'd like to heal. Do you have any ideas of how I might heal that upset? And here are some of my ideas. And by the way, it was my spoon, and I really don't like them taking my, you know, take something ridiculous like that. And what you do is you build the brain cells. If you go back to Yeshua, he said that his work and his teaching were only for those who had the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we can fairly safely assume that most everybody in his audience had what we called physical eyes and ears. It wasn't about the physical eyes and ears. What it was about was those who had the brain cells. Remember our conversation about the two-door igloo? In order for the man from Guatemala to even start to be able to conceive of a two-door igloo, he had to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. He had to have the information stored in brain cells so his mind could even conceive of such a thing. In order to even conceive of responsibility communication, you've got to build the brain cells for it. Now, we've started today in our workshop with building those brain cells. But there's a challenge in bringing this into actualization in your life. And the challenge is that you have a lot of brain cells that go in a totally different direction about communication. You have different goals for communication. There are a couple of things that you need to do if you really want to make this a functional tool for you. One is, get a hold of that forgiveness process, the reality management sheet, and start to forgive. That is, remove those old goals that have you going in another direction, using communication for blame or to overpower somebody or to win or whatever it is that you've used your communication for in the past. And then build the brain cells for what responsibility looks like. Build the brain cells for what it looks like to describe the reality that I hold in my mind with words that indicate that I know this is my reality and it's not about you. When I can do that, I will recapture 1,000 generations of insanity from my past. And as I recapture and put an end to those generations, you know, you might remember that story about Moses and that whole group wandering in the desert for 40 years. Does anybody remember what had to happen in order for them to get out of the desert and into the promised land? They said the old generation had to die off. That didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the old causes held in brain cells from the previous generations had to be uprooted. This is how to go directly to what needs to be uprooted. Uproot it and create a safe community of support around you for healing those dynamics in yourself. There's a very powerful proverb that comes out of Africa. And what that proverb says is, if you want to go far, go together. If you want to go quickly, go alone. Most people don't go very far in cleaning up their genetic past, their generations, if they try to do it on their own. They've got to be part of and build a community of support for being able to work through that. And that's what these tools are about. That's what these tools are for, is to undo the parts of our minds that don't work, that don't really support us, to uproot the generational patterns that keep us locked into hostility or fear. Our normal state as human beings is that of aliveness, joy, and creativity. Your structure, I would offer, is a custom-designed device that is designed to experience the active presence of love on a cellular level 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Why is that? It's because you are made of the stuff called love. You live, move, and have your being in the stuff called love. Now, I've had people say, well, gee, Michael, you know, if I'm made of love and I live, move, and have my being in love and the Creator is love, why don't I feel it? Oh, you, being gifted as a creator, have created for yourself other gods. And those other gods, when they are active in your mind, create graven images of hostility and fear. And you hold those graven images of hostility and fear before the love that you were designed for. If your generations have taught you to do that, then you have an habitual way of behaving that maintains the gods you worship most. And your feelings will tell you which gods you worship. You know, something unusual or something wonderful about the human being is that we're the only creature we know of that has the power of choice. We're the only creature we know of that can originate consciously mind energy. Every other creature's got to obey. There is no other creature that can make new choices like we can, at least not that we know of. You know, you're not going to find a pair of robins that come home here after the winter is done and land in your backyard, and one of the robins turns to the other and says, you know, dear, we come to this beautiful backyard in Oklahoma City every year, and every year we come here, we build a robin's nest. I think this year we should build an Oriole model. I was looking at one of those when we were down in Florida. You're not going to find a robin that does that. The robin has within it the brain cells, the vibration, the guidance system, to build a robin's nest. It can't change its mind. You are not going to find a salmon swimming in the warm South Pacific waters when it gets the call that says, say what? What was that you wanted me to do? Let me get this straight now. You want me to swim away from these nice warm South Pacific waters, 3,000 miles, yeah, to that icy cold stream in which I was spawned. And then what is it you want me to do? You want me to swim upstream against the current, yeah. Let me get this clear. You want me to get beat half to death on the rocks, lay eggs, die, and as my body breaks up, the hatching eggs will eat my flesh and become the next. No, I think I'll stay here. You're not going to find a salmon that says I'm going to stay here. It's going to do exactly what it was told to do because it can't originate mind energy. You were the only creature that was given the ability to engage in original creation. And if you and or your generation have engaged in the creation of a mindset of hostility and fear, it's time to change your mind. You were made for the embodiment of love. It's the stuff each newborn is made of. It is what you are made of. I join you and support you in being love in the world.